the crowd, and for a second, I wondered who they'd really come to see. Alyssa or Tatiana? Finally, the cathedral came into view, which was good news for Alyssa. The sun didn't kill Maroi like it did Strigoi, but the heat and sunlight were still uncomfortable for any vampire. The procession was nearly finished, and she, being one of those allowed into the church service, would soon get to enjoy air conditioning. As I studied the surroundings, I couldn't help but think what a circle of irony my life was. Off to the sides of the church's extensive grounds were two giant statues showing ancient Maroi monarchs of legend, a king and queen who had helped the Maroi prosper. Even though they were a fair distance from the church, the statues loomed ominously, like they were scrutinizing everything. Near the queen's statue was a garden that I knew well. I'd been forced to landscape it as punishment for running off to Las Vegas. My true purpose on that trip, which no one knew, had been to free Victor Dashkoff from prison. Victor had been a longtime enemy of ours, but he and his brother Robert, a spirit user, had held the knowledge we needed to save Dimitri. If any guardians had found out that I'd freed Victor, then later lost him, my punishment would have been a lot worse than filing and landscaping. At least I'd done a good job with the garden, I thought bitterly. If I was executed, I'd leave a lasting mark at court. Lyssa's eyes lingered on one of the statues for a long time before she turned back to the church. She was sweating heavily now, and I realized some of it wasn't just the heat. She was anxious too. But why? Why was she so nervous? This was just ceremony. All she had to do was go through the motions here. Yet, there it was again. Something else was bothering her. She was still keeping a cluster of thoughts from me, but a few leaked out as she worried. Too close, too close, we're moving too fast. Fast? Not by my estimation. I could have never handled this slow, stately pace. I felt especially bad for the pallbearers. If I were one, I would have said to hell with propriety and started jogging toward my final destination. Of course, that might jostle the body. If the funeral coordinator had been upset over Lyssa's dress, there was no telling how she'd react if Tatiana fell out of the coffin. Our view of the cathedral was getting clearer, its dome shining amber and orange in the setting sun. Lyssa was still several yards away, but the priest standing out front was clearly visible. His robes were almost blinding. They were made of heavy, glittering gold brocade, long and full. A rounded hat with a cross, also gold, sat on his head. I thought it was in poor taste for him to outshine the queen's clothing, but maybe that was just what priests did on formal occasions. Maybe it got God's attention. He lifted his arms in welcome, showing off more of that rich fabric. The rest of the crowd and I couldn't help but stare at the dazzling display.
So, you can imagine our surprise when the statues blew up!
Chapter 4.
And when I say they blew up, I mean they blew up! Flames and smoke unfurled like petals from a newly opened flower as those poor monarchs exploded into pieces of rock. For a moment, I was stunned. It was like watching an action movie. The explosion cracking the air and shaking the ground. Then, guardian training kicked in. Critical observation and calculation took over. I immediately noticed that the bulk of the statue's material blew toward the outer sides of the garden. Small stone pieces and dust rained down on the funeral procession, but no large chunks of rock hit Lyssa or anyone standing nearby. Assuming the statues had not spontaneously combusted, whoever had blown them up had done so in a precise way. The logistics aside, huge billowing pillars of flame are still pretty scary. Chaos broke loose as everyone tried to get away, only they all took different routes, so collisions and entanglements occurred. Even the pallbearers set down their precious burden and took off. Ambrose was the last to do so, his mouth agape and eyes wide as he stared at Tatiana. but another look at the statue sent him off into the mob. A few guardians tried to keep order, herding people back down the funeral path, but it didn't do a lot of good. Everyone was out for themselves, too terrified and panicked to think reasonably. Well, everyone except for Lissa. To my surprise, she wasn't surprised. She had been expecting the explosion. She didn't run right away, despite people pushing past and shoving her aside. She stood rooted where she'd been when the statues blew up, studying them and the wreckage they'd caused. In particular, she seemed concerned about anyone in the crowd who might have been hurt by the blasts. But no. As I'd already observed, there seemed to be no injuries. And if there were, it was going to be because of the stampede. Satisfied, Lissa turned and began walking away with the others. Well, she was walking. They were running. She'd only gone a little distance when she saw a huge group of guardians hurrying toward the church, faces grim. Some of them stopped to aid those escaping the destruction, but most of the guardians were on their way to the blast site to see what had happened. Lissa paused again, causing the guy behind her to slam into her back, but she barely felt the impact. She intently watched the guardians, taking note of how many there were, and then moved on once more. Her hidden thoughts were starting to unravel. Finally, I began to see pieces of the plan she'd kept hidden from me. She was pleased. Nervous, too, but overall she felt... A commotion back at the jail snapped me into my own mind. The usual quiet of the holding area had shattered and was now filled with grunts and exclamations. I leapt up from where I'd been sitting and pressed against the bars, straining to see what was happening. Was this building about to explode, too? My cell only faced a wall in the hallway, with no view of the rest of the corridor or its entrance. I did, however, see the guardians who usually stood at the hall's far end come tearing past me, toward whatever altercation was occurring. I didn't know what this meant for me, and braced for anything, friend or foe. For all I knew, there could be some political fringe group launching attacks on the court to make a statement against the Moroi government. Peering around the cell, I swore silently, wishing I had anything to defend myself. The closest I had was Abe's book, which was no good at all. If he was the badass he pretended to be, he really would have slipped a file into it. Or gotten me something bigger, like War and Peace. The scuffling died down and footsteps thundered toward me. Clenching my fists, I took a few steps back, ready to defend myself against anyone. Anyone turned out to be Eddie Castile and Mikhail Tanner. Friendly faces were not what I had expected. Eddie was a longtime friend from St. Vladimir's, another new guardian like me, and someone who'd stuck by me through a lot of misadventures, including the Viktor Dashkov prison break. Mikhail was older than us, mid-20s, and had helped us restore Dmitri in the hopes that Sonia Karp, a woman Mikhail had loved who had turned Strogoi, might be saved as well. I glanced back and forth between the two guys' faces. "What's going on?" I demanded.
"Nice to see you too," said Eddie.
He was sweating and keyed up with battle fervor, a few purple marks on his face showing he'd met someone's fist tonight. In his hand was a weapon I'd seen in the Guardian's arsenal, a baton-type thing used to incapacitate people without killing them. But Mikhail held something much more valuable. The key card and mechanical key to open my cell. My friends were staging a prison break. Unbelievable! Crazy was usually my specialty.
"Did you guys..." I frowned. The thought of escape filled me with joy, but the logistics were sobering. Clearly, they'd been responsible for the fight with my guards that I'd just heard. Getting down here in the first place wasn't that easy, either.
"Did you two just take on every guardian in this building?" Mikhail finished unlocking the door, and I didn't waste any time in hurrying out. After feeling so oppressed and smothered for days, it was like stepping onto a mountain ledge, wind and space all around me.
"Rose, There are no guardians in this building. Well, maybe one. And these guys.
Eddie gestured in the direction of the earlier fight, where I assumed my guards lay unconscious. Surely my friends hadn't killed anyone. The rest of the guardians are all checking out the explosion, I realized. Pieces began coming together, including Lyssa's lack of surprise over the commotion. Oh, no. You had Christian blow up ancient Moroi artifacts.
Of course not, said Eddie.
He seemed shocked that I would have suggested such an atrocity.
Other fire users would be able to tell if he did.
Well, that's something, I said. I should have had more faith in their sanity. Or maybe not.
We used C4,
explained Mikhail. Where on earth did you... My tongue locked up when I saw who was standing at the end of the hallway. Dimitri. Not knowing how he was during my imprisonment had been frustrating. Christian and Tasha's report had been only a tease. Well, here was the answer. Dimitri stood near the hall's entrance in all his 6'7" glory, as imperious and intimidating as any god. His sharp brown eyes assessed everything in an instant, and his strong, lean body was tensed and ready for any threat. The look on his face was so focused, so filled with passion, that I couldn't believe anyone ever could have thought he was a Strigoi. Dimitri burned with life and energy. In fact, looking at him now, I was again reminded of how he'd stood up for me at my arrest. He wore that same expression. Really, it was the same one I'd seen countless times. It was the one people feared and admired. It was the one I had loved. You're here too? I tried reminding myself that my muddled romantic history wasn't the most important thing in the world for a change. Aren't you under house arrest?
He escaped,
said Eddie slyly. I caught the real meaning. He and Mikhail had helped Dimitri escape.
It's what people would expect some violent, probably still a Strigoi guy to do, right? You'd also expect him to come bust you out, added Mikhail, playing along with the game. Especially considering how he fought for you last week. Really, everyone is going to think he busted you out alone, not with us.
Dimitri said nothing. His eyes, while still carefully watching our surroundings, were also assessing me. He was making sure I was okay and uninjured.
Come on, Dimitri finally said. We don't have much time.
That was an understatement. But there was one thing bugging me about my friend's brilliant plan. There's no way they'll think he did it alone, I exclaimed, realizing what Mikhail was getting at. They were setting Dimitri up as the culprit in this escape. I gestured to the unconscious guardians at our feet. They saw your faces!
Not really,
a new voice said.
Not after a little spirit-induced amnesia. By the time they wake up, the only person they'll remember seeing will be that unstable Russian guy. No offense.
None taken,
said Dimitri, as Adrian stepped through the doorway. I stared, trying not to gape. There they were together, the two men in my life. Adrian hardly looked like he could jump into a fist fight, but he was as alert and serious as the other fighters here. His lovely eyes were clear and full of the cunning I knew they could possess when he really tried. That's when it hit me. He showed no sign of intoxication whatsoever. Had what I'd seen the other day been a ruse, or had he forced himself to take control? Either way, I felt a slow grin creeping over my face.
Lyssa lied to your mom earlier, I said. You're supposed to be passed out drunk somewhere.
He rewarded me with one of his cynical smiles.
Well, yes. That would probably be the smarter and more enjoyable thing to be doing right now. And hopefully that's what everyone thinks I'm doing.
We need to go,
said Dimitri, growing agitated. We turned toward him,
our jokes vanished. That attitude I'd noticed about Dimitri, the one that said he could do anything and would always lead you to victory, made people want to follow him unconditionally. The expressions on Mikhail and Eddie's faces, as they grew serious, showed that was exactly how they felt. It seemed natural to me, too. Even Adrian looked like he believed in Dimitri. And in that moment, I admired Adrian for putting aside any jealousy, and also for risking himself like this. Especially since Adrian had made it clear on more than one occasion he didn't want to be involved with any dangerous adventures or use his spirit in a covert way. In Las Vegas, for example, he'd simply accompanied us in an observer's role. Of course, he'd also been drunk most of the time, but that probably made no difference. I took a few steps forward, but Adrian suddenly held out a hand to stop me.
Wait. Before you go with us, you need to know something.
Dimitri started to protest, eyes glinting with impatience.
She does,
argued Adrian, meeting Dimitri's gaze squarely.
Rose, if you escape, you're more or less confirming your guilt. You'll be a fugitive. If the Guardians find you, they aren't going to need a trial or sentence to kill you on sight.
Four sets of eyes rested on me as the full meaning sank in. If I ran now and was caught, I was dead for sure. If I stayed, I had the slim chance that in my short time before trial, we might find evidence to save me. It wasn't impossible, but if nothing turned up, I was also most certainly dead. Either option was a gamble. Either one had the strong possibility of me not surviving. Adrian looked as conflicted as I felt. We both knew I didn't have any good choices. He was simply worried and wanted me to know what I was risking. Dimitri, however, for him there was no debate. I could see it all over his face. He was an advocate of rules and doing the proper thing. But in this case, with such bad odds, it was better to risk living as a fugitive, and if death came, better to face it fighting. My death will not be penciled in on someone's calendar.
Let's go,
I said. We hurried out of the building, anxious to get moving with the plan. I couldn't help but comment to Adrian. You've got to be using a lot of spirit to pull off all those illusions on the guards.
I am,
he agreed.
And I don't really have the power to do it for very long. Lissa could probably make a dozen guardians think they'd seen ghosts. Me, I can barely make a few forget Eddie and Mikhail. That's why there had to be someone they'd remember to attract the attention, and Dimitri's the ideal scapegoat.
Well, thank you. I gave his hand a gentle squeeze. As warmth flowed between us, I didn't bother telling him I was a long way from being free yet. It would diminish his heroics. We had a lot of obstacles ahead, but I still appreciated him stepping up like this and respecting my decision to go along with the escape plan. Adrian shot me a sidelong glance.
Yeah, well, I'm supposed to be crazy, right?
A flash of affection shone in his eyes.
And there isn't much I wouldn't do for you. The stupider, the better.
We emerged to the main floor, and I saw that Eddie had been right about Guardian security. The halls and rooms were virtually deserted. Without a second glance, we hurried outdoors, and the fresh air seemed to renew my energy. Now what? I asked my rescuers.
Now we take you to the getaway car,
said Eddie. The garages weren't far, but they weren't close either. That's a lot of open ground to cover, I said. I didn't bring up the obvious problem. Me being killed if spotted.
I'm using spirit to keep us all vague and nondescript,
said Adrian. More testing of his magic. He couldn't handle much more.
People won't recognize us unless they stop and stare directly at us. Which they probably won't,
said Mikhail.
If anyone even notices us at all. Everyone's too worried about themselves to pay much attention to others in all this chaos.
Looking around outside, I could see he was right.
The jail's building was far from the church, but by now, people who'd been near the blast had made their way to this part of court. Some were running into their residences. Some were seeking guardians, hoping for protection. And some were going the same direction we were, toward the garages. People are freaked out enough to actually try to leave court, I realized. Our group was moving as fast as we could with Adrian, who wasn't in the same shape as Dompierre's. The garages will be crowded. Both official court vehicles and visiting guests parked in the same area.
That could help us, said Mikhail. More chaos.
With so many distractions in my own reality, I couldn't plunge completely into Lyssa's. A light brush of the bond found her safe, over in the palace. What's Lyssa doing during all of this? I asked. Believe me, I was glad she wasn't involved with this busting me out of jail madness. But as Adrian had noted, her ability with spirit could have gone much farther than his here. And now, looking back on it all, it was obvious she had known about this plan. That had been her secret.
Lyssa needs to stay innocent. She can't be linked to any part of the escape or explosion, replied Dimitri, eyes fixed ahead on his goal.
His tone was firm. He still regarded her as his savior.
She has to keep herself visible with the other royals. So does Christian.
He almost smiled. Almost.
Those two would certainly be my first suspects if something exploded.
But the Guardians won't suspect them once they realize the blast wasn't caused by magic, I mused, Mikhail's earlier words returned to me. And hey, where did you guys get a hold of C4? Military-grade explosives are kind of extreme, even for you. No one answered me because three Guardians suddenly leapt out into our path. Apparently, they weren't all out of the church. Dimitri and I surged ahead of our group, moving as one, just as we always had in battle together. Adrian had said the illusion he'd stretched over our group wouldn't hold if anyone was facing us directly. I wanted to make sure Dimitri and I were the first line of contact with these Guardians, in the hopes they wouldn't recognize the others behind us. I threw myself into the fight without hesitation, defensive instincts kicking in. But in those milliseconds, the reality of what I was doing truly sank in. I'd fought Guardians before and always felt guilty about it. I'd taken on the ones at Tarasov Prison, as well as the Queen's Guard during my arrest. I hadn't really known any of them, though. Just realizing they were my colleagues had been bad enough. But now? Now I was facing one of the most difficult challenges in my life. As small as it seemed. After all, three Guardians were an easy match for me and Dimitri. The problem was, I knew these Guardians. Two of them I'd run into quite a bit after graduation. They worked at court and had always been kind to me. The third Guardian wasn't just someone I knew. She was a friend. Meredith, one of the few girls in my class at St. Vladimir's. I saw the flash of uneasiness in her eyes, a sentiment mirroring my own. This felt wrong to her, too. But she was a Guardian now, and like me, she had had duty drilled into her throughout her life. She believed I was a criminal. She could see I was free and in attack mode. Procedure dictated she take me down, and honestly, I wouldn't have expected anything less. It's what I would have done had our roles been reversed. This was life and death. Dimitri was on the other two guys, as fast and badass as ever. Meredith and I went for each other. At first, she tried to knock me down by virtue of her weight, probably in the hopes of pinning me down until backup could help grab me. Only I was stronger. She should have known that. How many times had we sparred in the school's gym? I'd almost always won, and this was no game, no practice drill. I pushed back at her attack, punching her on the side of her jaw and desperately praying I didn't break anything. She kept moving through the pain, but again, I was superior. I caught a hold of her shoulders and threw her down. Her head hit hard, but she remained conscious. I didn't know whether to be grateful or not. Maintaining my grip, I put her in a chokehold, waiting until her eyes closed. I released as soon as I was sure she was out, my heart twisting in my chest. Glancing over, I saw Dimitri had also taken down his opponents. Our group kept moving as though nothing had happened. But I glanced at Eddie, knowing there was grief on my face. He looked pained too, but sought to reassure me as we hurried along.
"You did what you had to," he said. "She'll be okay. Banged up, but okay."
I hit her hard.
"The medics can deal with concussions. Hell, how many did we get in practice?"
I hoped he was right. The lines between right and wrong were getting confusing. The one good thing, I supposed, was that Meredith had been so occupied by the sight of me that she probably hadn't noticed Eddie and the others. They'd held back from the fight, hopefully keeping on Adrian's veil of spirit while Dimitri and I took the attention. We finally reached the garages, which were indeed more crowded than usual. Summeroy had already driven off. One royal was hysterical because her driver had her car's keys, and she didn't know where he was. She was shouting to passers-by to see if anyone could hotwire the car for her. Dimitri led us purposefully forward, never wavering. He knew exactly where we were going. There had been a lot of planning, I realized, most of which had probably happened yesterday. Why had Lyssa obscured it from me? Wouldn't it have been better for me to have a heads up on the plan? We scurried through the people, heading toward the garage on the very furthest side. There, sitting just outside of it, and seemingly ready to go, was a drab gray Honda Civic. A man stood near it, arms crossed as he examined the windshield. Hearing our approach, he turned around. "Abe!" I exclaimed. My illustrious father turned and gave me one of those charming smiles that could lure the unwary to their doom.
"What are you doing here?" demanded Dimitri. "You'll be on the list of suspects, too. You were supposed to stay back with the others."
Abe shrugged. He looked remarkably unconcerned at Dimitri's angry expression. I wouldn't have wanted that fury directed at me.
"Vasilisa will make sure a few people at the palace swear they saw me there during suspicious times."
He turned his dark eyes toward me.
"Besides, I couldn't leave without telling you goodbye, could I?"
I shook my head in exasperation. "Was this all part of your plan as my lawyer? I don't recall explosive escapes being part of legal training."
"Well, I'm sure it wasn't part of Damon Taurus's legal training."
Abe's smile never wavered.
"I told you, Rose, you will never face execution, or even a trial, if I can help it."
He paused.
"Which, of course, I can."
I hesitated, glancing toward the car. Dimitri stood by it with a set of keys, looking impatient. Adrian's words echoed in my memory. "If I run, it's just going to make me seem that much more guilty."
"They already think you're guilty,"
said Abe.
"You wasting away in that cell won't change that. This just ensures we now have more time to do what we need to without your execution looming over us."
"And what are you going to do exactly?"
"Prove you're innocent," said Adrian. "Oh, well, that you didn't kill my aunt. I've known for a while you aren't all that innocent."
"What, are you guys going to destroy the evidence?" I asked, ignoring the dig.
"No,"
said Eddie.
"We have to find who really did kill her."
"You guys shouldn't be involved with that now that I'm free. It's my problem. Isn't that why you got me out?"
"It's a problem you can't solve while you're at court,"
said Abe.
"We need you gone and safe."
"Yeah, but I..."
"We're wasting time arguing," said Dimitri.
His gaze fell on the other garages. The crowds were still chaotic, too busy with their own fears to notice us yet. That didn't affect Dimitri's concern. He handed me a silver stake, and I didn't question the reasons. It was a weapon, something I couldn't turn down.
"I know everything looks disorganized, but you'll be amazed at how quickly the Guardians will restore order. And when they do, they're going to lock this place down."
"They don't need to," I said slowly, my mind spinning. "We're already going to have trouble going out of court. We'll be stopped, if we can even get to the gate. There are going to be cars lined up for miles.
Ah, well,
said Abe, idly studying his fingertips.
I have it on good authority there is going to be a new gate opening up soon over on the south side of the wall.
The truth dawned on me. Oh, Lord. You're the one who's been doling out C4.
You make it sound so easy,
he said with a frown.
That stuff's hard to get a hold of.
Dimitri's patience was at an end.
All of you, Rose needs to leave now. She's in danger. I'll drag her out if I have to.
You don't have to go with me, I shot back, kind of offended at the presumption. Memories of our recent arguments emerged, of Dimitri saying he couldn't love me and didn't even want to be friends. I'll take care of myself. No one else needs to get in trouble. Give me the keys. Instead, Dimitri gave me one of those rueful looks that said he thought I was being utterly ridiculous. We could have been back in class at St. Vladimir's Academy.
Rose, I can't really get in any more trouble. Someone has to be responsible for helping you, and I'm the best choice.
I wasn't so sure of that. If Tatiana really had made progress in convincing people Dimitri wasn't a threat, this escapade would ruin it all.
Go, said Eddie, surprising me with a quick hug. We'll be in touch through Lissa.
I realized then that I was fighting a losing battle with this group. It really was time to leave. I hugged Mikhail, too, murmuring in his ear. Thank you. Thank you so much for your help. I swear we'll find her. We'll find Sonia. He gave me that sad smile of his and didn't reply. Adrian was the hardest to leave behind. I could tell it was difficult for him, too, no matter how relaxed his grin seemed. He couldn't be happy about me going off with Dimitri. Our hug lasted a little bit longer than the others, and he gave me a soft, brief kiss on the lips. I almost felt like crying after how brave he'd been tonight. I wished he could go with me, but knew he'd be safer here.
Adrian, thank you for...
He held up his hand.
It's not goodbye, little Dampier. I'll see you in your dreams.
If you stay sober enough. He winked.
For you, I just might.
A loud booming noise interrupted us, and we saw a flash of light off to my right. People near the other garages screamed.
There, you see?
Asked Abe, quite pleased with himself.
A new gate. Perfect timing.
I gave him a reluctant hug, too, and was surprised when he didn't pull back right away. He smiled at me, fondly.
Ah, my daughter,
he said.
18, and already you've been accused of murder, aided felons, and acquired a death count higher than most guardians will ever see.
He paused.
I couldn't be prouder.
I rolled my eyes. Goodbye, old man. And thanks. I didn't bother asking him about the felons part. Abe wasn't stupid. After I'd asked him about a prison that had later been breached, he'd probably figured out who was behind Victor Dashkov's escape. And like that, Dimitri and I were in the car, speeding off toward Abe's new gate. I regretted not being able to say goodbye to Lissa. We were never truly apart with the bond, but it couldn't take the place of face-to-face communication. Still, it was worth it to know she would be safe and free of any connection to my escape. I hoped. Like always, Dimitri drove, which I still thought was totally unfair. It had been one thing when I was his student, but now? Wouldn't he ever give up that wheel? This didn't seem like the time to discuss it, though, particularly since I didn't plan on us staying together much longer. A few people had come out to see where the wall had blown up, but no one official had surfaced yet. Dimitri raced through the gap as impressively as Eddie had when he'd driven through Tarasov Prison's gate, only the Civic didn't handle the bumpy, grassy terrain as well as the SUV in Alaska. The problem with our making our own exit was that it didn't come with an actual road. Even that was beyond Abe. "Why is our getaway car a Civic?" I asked. "It's not really great for off-roading." Dimitri didn't look at me, but continued navigating over the rough ground toward a more drivable area.
"Because Civics are one of the most common cars out there, and don't attract attention. And this should be the only off-roading we do. Once we hit a freeway, we're putting as much distance between us and court as we can. Before abandoning the car, of course."
"Abandon?" I shook my head, letting it go. We reached a dirt road that felt like the smoothest surface on Earth after that jolting start. "Look, now that we're out of there, I want you to know that I mean it. You don't have to come with me. I appreciate your help in the escape, really, but hanging out with me won't do you any favors. They'll be hunting for me more than you. If you take off, you can live somewhere around humans and not be treated like a lab animal. You might even be able to slink back to court. Tasha would put up a fight for you." Dimitri didn't answer for a long time. It drove me crazy. I wasn't the kind of person who handled silence well. It made me want to chatter and fill the void. Plus, the longer I sat there, the more it hit me that I was alone with Dimitri. Like, really and truly alone for the first time since he'd become a Dampier. I felt like a fool, but in spite of the dangers we still risked, well, I was still overwhelmed by him. There was something so powerful about his presence. Even when he made me angry, I still found him attractive. Maybe the adrenaline pounding through me was addling my brain. Whatever it was, I was consumed by more than just his physical aspects, though they were certainly distracting. The hair, the face, his closeness to me, his scent, I felt it all. And it made my blood burn. But the inner Dimitri, the Dimitri who'd just led a small army through a prison break, captivated me just as much. It took me a moment to realize why this was so powerful. I was seeing the old Dimitri again. The one I'd worried was gone forever. He wasn't. He was back. At long last, Dimitri replied.
"I'm not leaving you. None of your rose logic arguments are going to work. And if you try to get away from me, I'll just find you."
I didn't doubt he could, which just made the situation more confusing. "But why? I don't want you with me." I still felt a lingering attraction for him, yes, but that didn't change the fact that he had hurt me in breaking things off between us. He had rejected me, and I needed to harden my heart, particularly if I wanted to move on with Adrian. Clearing my name and leading a normal life seemed far away right now, but if it happened, I wanted to be able to return to Adrian with open arms.
"It doesn't matter what you want," he said, "or what I want."
Ouch.
"Lissa asked me to protect you."
"Hey, I don't need anyone to..."
"And?"
he continued.
"I meant what I said to her. I swore I'd serve her and help her for the rest of my life. Anything she asks. If she wants me to be your bodyguard, then that's what I'll be."
He gave me a dangerous look.
"There's no way you're getting rid of me anytime soon."
Chapter 5. Getting away from Dimitri wasn't just about our rocky romantic past. I'd meant it when I said I didn't want him getting in trouble because of me. If the Guardians found me, my fate wouldn't be that much different from what I'd already been facing. But Dimitri? He'd been making baby steps toward acceptance. Sure, that was pretty much destroyed now, but his chance for a life wasn't over. If he didn't want to live at court or with humans, he could go back to Siberia and return to his family. Out there in the middle of nowhere, he'd be hard to find. And with how close that community was, they'd go to a lot of trouble to hide him if someone ever did try to hunt him down. Staying with me was definitely the wrong option. I just needed to convince him.
I know what you're thinking,
Dimitri said, after we'd been on the road for about an hour. We hadn't spoken much, both of us lost in our own thoughts. After a few more country roads, we'd finally made it to an interstate and were making good time toward... well, I had no idea. I'd been staring out the window, pondering all the disasters around me, and how I alone could fix them. Huh? I glanced over at him. I thought there might be the smallest hint of a smile on his lips, which seemed absurd considering this was probably the worst situation he'd been in since being restored from his Strigoi state.
And it won't work, he added. You're planning how to get away from me, probably when we eventually stop for gas. You're thinking maybe you'll have a chance to run off then.
The crazy thing was, I had been thinking very much along those lines. The old Dimitri was a good partner on the road, but I wasn't so sure I liked having his old ability to guess my thoughts back as well. This is a waste of time, I said, gesturing around the car.
Oh, you have better things to do than flee the people who want to lock you up and execute you. Please don't tell me again that this is too dangerous for me.
I glared. It's about more than just you. Running away shouldn't be my only concern. I should be helping clear my name, not hiding in whatever remote place you're undoubtedly taking me to. The answers are at court.
And you have lots of friends at court who will be working on that. It'll be easier on them if they know you're safe.
What I want to know is why no one told me about this. Or, I mean, why Lissa didn't. Why did she hide it? Don't you think I'd have been more helpful if I'd been ready?
We did the fighting, not you,
Dimitri said.
We were afraid if you knew. You might give away that something was up.
I would have never told.
Not intentionally, no. But if you were tense or anxious, well, your guards can pick up on those kinds of things.
Well, now that we're out, can you tell me where we're going? Was I right? Is it some crazy remote place? No answer. I narrowed my eyes at him. I hate not being in the loop. That tiny smile on his lips grew a little bigger.
Well, I have my own personal theory that the more you don't know, the more your curiosity is likely to make sure you stick around with me.
That's ridiculous, I replied, though really, it wasn't all that unreasonable of a theory. I sighed. When the hell did things get so out of control? When did you guys start being the masterminds? I'm the one who comes up with the wacky impossible plans. I'm supposed to be the general here. Now I'm barely a lieutenant. He started to say something else, but then froze for a few seconds, his face instantly taking on that wary, lethal guardian look. He swore in Russian. What's wrong? I asked. His attitude was contagious, and I immediately forgot all thoughts of crazy plans. In the erratic flash of headlights from oncoming traffic, I could see his eyes dart up to the rearview mirror.
We have a tail. I didn't think it would happen this soon.
Are you sure? It had grown dark, and the number of cars on the highway had increased. I didn't know how anyone could spot one suspicious car among that many. But, well, he was Dimitri. He swore again, and suddenly, in a maneuver that made me grab the dashboard, he cut sharply across two lanes, barely missing a minivan that expressed its annoyance with a lot of honking. There was an exit right there, and he just barely made it without clipping the exit ramp's rail. I heard more honking, and when I looked back, I saw the headlights of a car that had made just as crazy a move to follow us onto the exit.
The court must have gotten the word out pretty fast, he said. They had someone watching the interstates.
Maybe we should have taken back roads. He shook his head.
Too slow. None of it would have been an issue once we switched cars, but they found us too soon. We'll have to get a new one here. This is the biggest city we'll hit before the Maryland border.
A sign said we were in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and as Dimitri skillfully drove us down a busy, commerce-filled road, I could see the tail mirroring everything we did. "What exactly is your plan to get a new car?" I asked warily.
"Listen carefully," he said, ignoring my question. "It is very, very important that you do exactly as I say. No improvising. No arguing. There are guardians in that car, and by now they've alerted every other guardian around here. Possibly even the human police."
"Wouldn't the police catching us create a few problems?"
"The alchemists would sort it out and make sure we ended up back with the Moroi."
The alchemists. I should have known they'd get involved. They were a secret society of humans who helped protect Moroi and Dampier interests, keeping us out of the mainstream human public. Of course, the alchemists didn't do it out of kindness. They thought we were evil and unnatural and mostly wanted to make sure we stayed on the fringes of their society. An escaped criminal like me would certainly be a problem they would want to help the Moroi with. Dimitri's voice was hard and commanding when he spoke again, though his eyes weren't on me. They were busy scanning the sides of the road.
"No matter what you think of the choices everyone's been making for you, no matter how unhappy you are with this situation, you know, I know you do, that I've never failed you when our lives were at stake. You trusted me in the past. Trust me now."
I wanted to tell him that what he said wasn't entirely true. He had failed me. When he'd been taken down by Strigoi, when he'd shown that he wasn't perfect, he had failed me by shattering the impossible godly image I had of him. But my life? No, he had always kept mine safe. Even as a Strigoi, I'd never entirely been convinced he could kill me. The night the Academy had been attacked, when he'd been turned, he told me to obey him without question, too. It had meant leaving him to fight Strigoi, but I'd done it. "Okay," I said quietly. "I'll do whatever you say. Just remember not to talk down to me. I'm not your student anymore. I'm your equal now." He glanced away from the side of the road just long enough to give me a surprised look.
"You've always been my equal, Rosa."
The use of the affectionate Russian nickname made me too stupid to respond, but it didn't matter. Moments later, he was all business again.
"There. Do you see that movie theater sign?"
I gazed down the road. There were so many restaurants and stores that their signs made a glittering haze in the night. At last, I saw what he meant. Westland Cinema.
"Yes. That's where we're going to meet."
We were splitting up? I'd wanted to part ways, but not like this. In the face of danger, separating suddenly seemed like an awful idea. I'd promised not to argue, though, and kept listening.
"If I'm not there in half an hour, you call this number and go without me."
Dimitri handed me a small piece of paper from his duster pocket. It had a phone number scrawled on it, not one I recognized. "If I'm not there in half an hour." The words were so shocking that I couldn't help my protest this time. "What do you mean if you're not— Ugh!" Dimitri made another abrupt turn, one that caused him to run a red light and only narrowly miss a number of cars. More honking ensued, but the move had been too sudden for our tail to keep up. I saw our pursuers whiz past on the main road, brake lights flashing as they searched for a place to turn around. Dimitri had taken us into a mall parking lot. It was packed with cars, and I glanced at the clock to get a grasp for human time. Almost 8 o'clock at night, early in the Moroi day, prime entertainment time for humans. He drove past a few entrances to the mall and finally selected one, pulling into a handicap spot. He was out of the car in one fluid motion, with me following just as quickly.
"Here's where we split up,"
he said, jogging toward a set of doors.
"Move fast, but don't run when we're inside. Don't attract attention. Blend in. Wind through it for a little bit, then get out through any exit but this one. Walk out near a group of humans, and then head for the theater."
we stepped into the mall.
Go!
As though afraid I might not move, he gave me a small push toward an escalator while he took off on the main floor. There was a part of me that wanted to just freeze and stand there, that felt dumbfounded by the sudden onslaught of people, light, and activity. I soon pushed that startled part aside and began heading up the escalator. Fast reflexes and instinctual reactions were part of my training. I'd honed them in school, in my travels, and with him. Everything I'd been taught about eluding someone came rushing back to my head. What I wanted to do more than anything was look around and see if I had a follower, but that would have definitely attracted attention. I had to imagine that at most, we had a couple minutes lead on our pursuers. They would have had to turn around to get back to the mall and then circle to spot our car, presuming they figured out we'd gone into the mall. I didn't think Harrisburg had enough of a Maroi presence to summon very many guardians on short notice. The ones they had would likely split up, some searching the mall and some guarding the entrances. This place had too many doors for the guardians to watch them all. My escape choice would be pure luck. I walked as fast as I reasonably could, weaving through couples, families with strollers, and giggling teens. I envied that last group. Their lives seemed so easy compared to mine. I also passed the usual mall stores, their names registering, but not much more. Ann Taylor, Abercrombie, Forever 21. Ahead of me, I could see the center of the mall where several corridors branched out. I'd have a choice to make soon. Passing an accessory store, I ducked inside and pretended to look at headbands. As I did, I covertly glanced back out to the mall's main section. I saw nothing obvious. No one had stopped, no one had followed me into the store. Beside the headband section was a clearance bin filled with items that obviously deserved to be on clearance. One item was a girly baseball cap, hot pink with a star done in rainbow rhinestones on the front. It was god-awful. I bought it, grateful the guardians hadn't taken away the meager cash I'd had on me when arrested. They probably figured it wasn't enough to bribe anyone. I also bought a ponytail holder, all the while still keeping an eye on the store's doorway. Before leaving, I bound my hair up as much as I could with the holder and then put on the hat. There was something silly about being reduced to disguises, but my hair was an easy way to ID me. It was a deep, almost black brown, and lack of any recent haircut had it hanging to my mid-back. In fact, between that and Dimitri's height, we would have made a very conspicuous pair walking through here. I merged back into the shoppers and soon reached the mall center. Not wanting to show any hesitation, I took a left toward Macy's. As I walked, I felt slightly embarrassed at the hat and wished I'd at least had time to find a more stylish one. Minutes later, when I spotted a guardian, I was glad I'd made such a quick fashion choice. He was near one of those carts you always see in the center of malls, pretending to be interested in cell phone covers. I recognized him first because of his stance and the way he was managing to act interested in a zebra print phone cover while simultaneously searching around him. Plus, Dompiers could always distinguish each other from humans with close enough examination. For the most part, our two races appeared pretty identical, but I could spot one of my own. I made sure not to look right at him and felt his eyes pass over me. I didn't know him, which meant he probably didn't know me either. He was likely going off a photo he'd seen once and expected my hair to be a big giveaway. Keeping as casual an air as I could, I moved past him at a leisurely pace, glancing in windows that kept my back to him but sent no obvious messages that I was on the run. All the while, my heart pounded in my chest. Guardians could kill me on sight. Did that apply to the middle of a mall? I didn't want to find out. When I was clear of the cart, I picked up my pace a little. Macy's would have its own outside door, and now it was just a gamble to see whether or not I'd made a good call coming in this direction. I entered the store, went down its escalator, and headed toward the main floor exit, passing a very nice selection of cute berets and fedoras. I paused near them. Not because I planned on upgrading my hat, but because it allowed me to fall in step just behind a group of girls who were also exiting. We left the store together, and my eyes quickly adjusted to the change in light.
There were lots of people around, but I again saw nothing threatening. My girls stopped to chat, giving me an opportunity to get my bearings without appearing totally lost. To my right, I spotted the busy road Dimitri and I had come in on, and from there, I knew how to get to the movie theater. I exhaled in relief and cut across the parking lot, still watching my surroundings. The farther I walked from the mall, the less crowded the parking lot became. Lampposts kept it from being totally dark, but there was still an eerie feel as things grew quieter and quieter. My initial impulse was to head right for the road and take the sidewalk directly to the theater. It was well lit and had people. But a moment later, I decided it was too conspicuous. I was pretty sure I could cut across parking lots much more quickly to get to the theater. It proved true. Kind of. I had the theater in sight when I realized I had been followed after all. Not far ahead of me, the shadow of a parking lamp's post didn't cast correctly. The shadow was too broad. Someone was behind the pole. I doubted a guardian had coincidentally picked this spot in the hopes Dimitri or I would come by. Most likely it was a scout who'd seen me and circled ahead for an ambush. I kept walking, trying not to obviously slow down, though every muscle in my body was tensing for attack. I had to be the one who attacked first. I had to be in control. My moment came, seconds before I suspected my ambusher would have made his move. I leapt out, throwing him, it turned out to be a Dompierre I didn't recognize, against a nearby car. Yup, I'd surprised him. Of course the surprise was mutual when the car's alarm went off, blaring into the night. I winced, trying to ignore the shrieking as I punched my captive on the left side of his jaw. I had to make the most of having him pinned. The force of my fist knocked his head against the car, but he took it admirably, promptly pushing back in an effort to free himself. He was stronger, and I did stumble a little, but not enough to lose my balance. What I lacked in strength, I made up for in speed. I dodged each attempt at me, but it brought me little satisfaction. That stupid car alarm was still going strong, and it was eventually going to attract the attention of other guardians or human authorities. I dashed around the side of the car, and he gave chase, stopping when we were on opposite sides. It was like two kids playing keep away. We mirrored each other as he tried to anticipate which direction I'd go. In the dim lighting, I saw something surprising tucked into his belt. A gun. My blood ran cold. Guardians were trained to use guns, but rarely carried them. Stakes were our weapon of choice. We were in the business of killing Strigoi, after all, and guns were ineffective. But against me? Yeah, a gun simplified his job. But I had a feeling he'd hesitate to use it. A car alarm could be blamed on someone accidentally getting too close. But a gunshot? That would elicit a call to the police. This guy wouldn't fire if he could help it. But he would if he ran out of options. This needed to end soon. At last, I made a move toward the front of the car. He tried to intercept me, but then I surprised him by springing onto the car's hood. Because honestly, at this point, it wasn't like the alarm could get any louder. In my split second of advantage, I threw myself off the car and onto him, knocking him flat to the ground. I landed on top of his stomach and held him down with all my weight while my hands went around his neck. He struggled, trying to throw me off, and nearly succeeded. At last, the lack of air won out. He stopped moving and fell into unconsciousness. I let go. For a brief moment, I had a flashback to our escape from court, when I'd used the same technique on Meredith. I saw her lying on the ground all over again and felt that same pang of guilt. Then, I shook it off. Meredith was okay. Meredith wasn't even here. None of that mattered. All that mattered was that this guy was out of commission, and I had to get out of here. Now. Without looking to see if others were coming, I tore off across the parking lot toward the theater. I stopped once I had some distance between me and the wailing car, using another car as cover. I saw no one near the guy yet, but over by the parking lot's front, close to the mall, there seemed to be some activity. I didn't stick around to get a closer look. Whatever it was, it couldn't be good for me. I reached the theater a couple minutes later, breathless more from fear than exhaustion. Running endurance was something I had built up a lot of, thanks to Dimitri. But where was Dimitri? Theatergoers mingled around, some giving my disheveled state an odd look, as they either waited for tickets or discussed what movie they'd just seen. I saw no sign of Dimitri anywhere. I had no watch. How long had passed since we departed? Surely not a half hour. I walked around the theater, staying obscured in the crowd, searching for any indication of Dimitri or more pursuers. Nothing. Minutes ticked by. Uneasily, I reached into my pocket and touched the piece of paper with the phone number. Leave, he told me. Leave and call the number. Of course, I had no cell phone, but that was the least of my problems right now.
Rose!
A car pulled up at the curb where others were dropping people off. Dimitri was leaning out the driver's side window, and I nearly fell over in relief. Well, okay, not nearly. In reality, I didn't waste a moment in hurrying over to him and hopping into the passenger seat. Without a word, he hit the gas and got us away from the theater and back to the main road. We said nothing at first. He was so wound up and on edge, it seemed the slightest provocation would make him snap in half. He drove as fast as he could without attracting police attention, all the while glancing into the rearview mirror. "Is there anyone behind us?" I asked at last, as he drove back onto the highway.
It doesn't look like it. It'll take them a while to figure out what car we're in.
I hadn't paid much attention when I'd entered, but we were in a Honda Accord, another ordinary-looking car. I also noticed that there was no key in the ignition.
Did you hotwire this car?
I then rephrased my question.
Did you steal this car?
You have an interesting set of morals,
he observed.
Breaking out of jail is okay, but steal a car and you sound totally outraged.
I'm just more surprised than outraged, I said, leaning back against the seat. I sighed.
I was afraid... Well, for a moment there, I was afraid you weren't coming. That they'd caught you or something.
No, most of my time was spent sneaking out and finding a suitable car.
A few minutes of silence fell. You didn't ask what happened to me, I pointed out, a little miffed.
Don't need to. You're here. That's what counts.
I got in a fight.
I can tell. Your sleeve is ripped.
I glanced down. Yep, ripped. I'd also lost the hat in my mad dash. No big loss.
Don't you want to know anything about the fight?
His eyes stayed on the road ahead of us.
I already know. You took down your enemy, you did it fast and you did it well. Because you're just that good.
I pondered his words for a moment. They were matter of fact. All business. And yet, his statement brought a tiny smile to my lips.
Okay, so what now, General? Don't you think they'll scan reports of stolen cars and get our license plate number?
Likely. But by then we'll have a new car. One they won't have any clue about.
I frowned. How are you pulling that off?
We're meeting someone in a few hours.
Damn it, I really hate being the last one to know about everything.
A few hours put us in Roanoke, Virginia. Most of our drive had passed uneventfully up until that point. But as the city came into view, I noticed Dimitri watching the exit signs until he found the one he wanted. Turning off the interstate, he continued checking for a tail and found none. We reached another commerce-filled road, and he drove to a McDonald's that stood out clearly from the rest of the businesses.
I don't suppose, I said, that this is a food break.
This, he responded, is where we catch our next ride.
He drove around the restaurant's parking lot, his eyes scanning for something, though I didn't initially know what. I spotted it a fraction of a second before he did. In the far corner of the lot, I saw a woman leaning against a tan SUV, her back to us. I couldn't see much of her, except that she wore a dark shirt and had tousled blonde hair that almost touched her shoulders. Dimitri pulled into the spot next to her vehicle, and I was out of hours the second he hit the brake. I recognized her before she even turned around.
Sydney?
The name came out as a question, though I knew for sure it was her. Her head turned, and I saw a familiar face, a human face, with brown eyes that could turn amber in the sun and a faint gold tattoo on her cheek.
"Hey, Rose,"
she said, a rueful smile playing on her lips. She held up a McDonald's bag.
"Figured you'd be hungry."
Chapter 6. Really, when you thought about it, Sydney showing up wasn't much weirder than half the other stuff that seemed to happen to me on a regular basis. Sydney was an alchemist, one I'd met in Russia when trying to find and kill Dimitri. She was my age and had hated being assigned over there, though I'd certainly appreciated her aid. As Dimitri had noted earlier, the alchemists would want to help the Maroi find and capture me. Yet, judging from the tension